Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio.
Each day, together, growing in our faith, Faith Radio.
And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I'm awfully glad you joined me today. I love Mondays, and I love we can be together during this time of the day, or if you're listening on podcast, whatever time of the day you get to listen. I am really, really happy we can do this together. And we're going to be doing a lot of togetherness for the next several days because we've got our spring share coming up, and without you, we don't move forward, so we do need your support. I appreciate the way that you care about Faith Radio now in its 70th year, and you keep supporting us year after year. It means all the world to us. Thank you so much, and God bless you for considering giving to Faith Radio. Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from Des Moines, is going to be with me in just a minute. Then Dr. John Snyder will be joining me in the second part of the hour. He's got quite a story. He's wrote a book about resenting God. He was in his 12-year program getting his degree. And in the 11th year, something amazing happened to him. And boy, was he confused and mad at God. You're going to definitely want to hear that. We'll take a break and we'll come back with Patrick in just a minute.
It's still there in the oak tree, that carving from when you were 10. It's still there, a whole aisle dedicated to board games, not video games. It's still there, a Bible on your desk, on your phone, in your heart, because some things stand the test of time. Over the last 70 years, Faith Radio has shared truth that doesn't change and doesn't get old. It's as fresh today as ever because faith and hope stand the test of time. Connecting faith to life, Faith Radio.
Reminding us where our hope is found.
With all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind.
This is Faith Radio.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Welcome to the show. I'm always glad to have Patrick Albanese, my friend, join me from prestigious West Des Moines, and we are having a happy, happy Monday, but I have a feeling by Wednesday I'm going to be a little less happy because we're looking at quite a change in weather. We are getting 10 to 12 inches of snow on Wednesday. Thank you, Minnesota.
Wow.
Can't really blame the state, but it's just what it is around here.
Yeah, now, how long is that going to last? A couple of days?
Yeah, day and a half, maybe. I don't know if you even move that around or if you just wait for it to melt. I don't think they shovel that. That's heart attack shoveling weather because it's so heavy.
Yeah, I was up there. I was working, and but I was staying downtown, and I didn't have I did have a vehicle. You loaned me your old Toyota Corolla.
Yes, I did.
To drive around town because I was in town for a few weeks, and we got one of those spring massive dumpings. It was amazing. I actually have a story about getting a spring dumping here in Iowa.
Let's hear it.
Okay.
Just make it interesting.
I will do my best to make it. Well, I'll take some of the details out. I was the traffic reporter on the news. And
Channel 8.
Channel 8, right.
Channel 8 News.
You know, this is, as you know, the way I kind of got the job is the traffic reporter they had got a full-time job at another station. And so I went in there and I said, hey, you guys don't have a traffic reporter. I'll do it till you find somebody. And they said, what do you know about any of this stuff? Nothing. But I was the only guy that stepped up. So they gave me the job. And I learned as I went. And I think I was in the job 6 or 8 weeks. And you know, I used to joke with people that, you know, that the title Des Moines Traffic was a bit of an oxymoron. You know, it's like
kind of like Los Angeles weather.
Just like Los Angeles. Yeah. And if, you know, I used to live in Los Angeles, and I thought if I was in Los Angeles, I'd have the hard job. But here it's the weather guy, and the weather guy in LA, he just sits back and says, look at that, 70.
Yeah.
But anyway, we get this 8 or 9 inches of snow first week in May. And I've only been on the job for a little bit. And so suddenly it's traffic accidents. It's a gigantic mess. And pretty much the whole newscast is mine.
Oh, funny.
And, you know, normally where they would cut to me, you know, maybe I think twice an hour I would do a big traffic hit, and I would do two small ones, and, you know, I'd be on and off. And usually it was, they'd say, yeah, your normal 45 seconds, we need you to cut that to 30. So I was always stunned that anybody would recognize me on the street, because I spent a total of 4 minutes on air on any given day. But on this particular day, I was it, and I didn't know what I was doing.
Oh, that's very funny.
But luckily I found, you know, the cool graphic buttons, and I had all sorts of things in my traffic reports. I had animals. Somehow or another, the traffic reporting system had graphics, and I looked deep into it, and they go, they got cows in here. Well, I might as well.
I use the cows.
I put them in there, and I'd say, got to watch out for this 3-cow pile up over here.
Oh, that's very funny.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah. I see, you know, you see signs like in the country where there's like a cow on a teeter-totter. I go, I need more clues.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to begin on that.
Yeah, I know.
Cows at play.
Yeah. But you know, I saw there was a Paul McCartney was being interviewed. I don't know how old Sir Paul is nowadays. He's in his 70s, isn't he? 74, 75, right around there.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, they asked him about the Beatles' ability to read music, and he said, "Well, none of us could read music." You know, so when you talk about your experience of going in and doing the traffic report, and, well, what do you know about us? And you go, nothing. I go, well, there's a lot of people that get into a business and industry with very little formal training or education, and they just all of a sudden rise to the top, and they start to instantly know what to do, and they do it better than most people who are trained.
Oh, well, you know, it's funny. I sometimes at colleges in town, I'll inquire to have me maybe come in and do a guest lecture on something. You know, they know me from either being on television, or I've been a performer my whole life. And then they'll say, now, do you have any advanced degrees? You know, a master's degree, anything like that. And it's like, well, no, I do not. Oh, okay. Well, then we can't have you.
Oh, wow. That eliminates you from talking to a group of students in a classroom?
Yeah. Somebody who's been doing it their whole life isn't qualified in their world because you don't have that the advanced degree.
Well, don't feel
you got to have the degree.
Yeah, I don't feel bad. Jesus couldn't have gotten the job either.
That's true. He didn't go to seminary.
No, I mean, he had no formal degree, so there's no way they would have booked him. So don't feel bad. You're in good company.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to equate myself entirely with him.
Nor would I. I'm not suggesting you are. I'm just saying, along lines of being qualified, I mean, you're.
We have that in common.
Yes.
You know, just because you have one thing in common with somebody doesn't mean you're identical to them. For instance, neither I nor Superman can see through lead.
Right.
But that's kind of where the similarities end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if we were to stop there, I'd say I'm a lot like Superman. A lot like Superman. I have the same weaknesses. Can't see through lead.
Mm.
Yeah.
I find it interesting in news of politics, and this mayor from Indiana, is he a mayor? Pete?
He's the mayor, yeah.
Buttigieg? Am I saying that right?
I think so. It's an awful lot of consonants in one name.
There's a lot going on there. He was talking about his sexuality, and he said, that's the thing I wish that the Mike Pences of the world would understand, that if you have a problem with who I am, your quarrel is not with me. Your quarrel, sir, is with my creator.
Wow. Talk about passing the buck. I mean, couldn't anybody say that? You know, I mean, couldn't somebody? He's gay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
he's married.
He's married, but I'm not sure that Mike Pence ever called him out at any point in time and said anything about him. And I'm thinking, so it's almost like he says, well, people get riled up if I mention the name Mike Pence, so let me throw that in there. And then this is one of those, I used to call it clever. Now it's just cliche, but you do the old, now I'll throw on those religious people, I'll throw it right back at him and say, it's their creator who did this to me.
Mm-hmm.
So blah, blah. Well, okay. I don't, does anybody get kind of one of those, you know, I could have had a V8 moments?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Does anybody say, wow, well, you won my vote on that?
Wow.
And again, it's just snarkiness. It's just snarkiness.
And when people take their understanding of scripture and it's not grounded in context or proper doctrine, and then they pull something out and use it, I always want to say, and I think you do too, do we want to look at the whole of scripture? And do we want to look at everything that scripture teaches? Or are we just cherry picking a couple of things that we can confuse people with?
Yes, it's you know, the old, well, Jesus was a socialist or whatever the political party du jour might be. I say, okay, you seem to be very interested in Jesus. I can point you in a direction and show you a whole bunch of really cool things he stood for. Are you interested? Yeah, no. Just this whole, my interpretation of something. And, I think they'll take that. They love that render unto Caesar. Things that are Caesar's, and they go, see, that's all about the taxation, and he wants to raise the taxes. Okay. All right. I know. But you know, they won't go much further. It's I think I saw that Stacey Abrams, and she was almost saying that it is not only is abortion, say, a right, it's demanded. And of course, Jesus would understand. And she added that it's good for business.
Okay, that just brought up my lunch.
Wow, you ate early today.
I did. I did. And that reminds me, I should take a break. Patrick Albanese is my guest, of course, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, the great state of Iowa. We'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. I have on our Skype line Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Right before we went to break, you were mentioning Stacey Abrams and something she said about abortion, which was very disturbing. Maybe you can continue on that.
Well, she was saying that it's good for business. So she was rambling a bit, and basically she was saying that, you know, a woman having control over reproductive rights means that she can continue to work, and that's good for businesses in the state. But, you know, and it's because of all these actors that are threatening to boycott the state of Georgia. I think the list is it up to 100 now? 100 actors that said, if you pass this fetal heartbeat bill, we're going to boycott your state and not come make movies there. So, I mean, that we're now down to what, like 3-4 million actors that will go there once we lose those 100.
Right. And why don't they do it in their own hometown? Don't they want to sleep in their own bed at night? Why don't they shoot in L.A.?
I used to have this discussion with an actor friend, and he made, I mean, let's just, I'm not going to give you who he is, but he was in Kindergarten Cop in a very small role.
Mm-hmm.
He played one of the bad guys. He played the bad guy in Kindergarten Cop. And he was always pro-union. And I would say, Richard, where have you been shooting films lately? And it was always, I'd compare it, I'd look at the state. Oh, it's a non-union state, another non-union state. You're pro-union, but you haven't worked in L.A. in 15 years. You're always leaving to go work in another state. And why are they leaving LA? Because LA's made it cost prohibitive to make a movie there. They're, you know, not only do they have these feather bedding rules with their unions, where they, the New York Broadway went through this a few years back, where you'd have to have these feather bedded jobs with the orchestra. If you had music, they'd say, oh yeah, well, you must have 22 pieces, whatever the number was. They'd say, well, we basically, what we need is a piano, a cello, a guitar player, and a drummer. They'd say, well, you're going to be hiring 22. And so the musicians would show up with their instruments, set them down at a chair, sit there for the duration of the show, get a paycheck and leave. And so Broadway started trying to go to electronic music, and there was a big strike over it. This is the kind of thing that happens. Well, that type of stuff happens in LA a lot. And so those type of union rules drove some of the business out, the cost of living there. And, you know, it just, they, you know, they're, why are they going to Georgia? Georgia doesn't have any better weather, better conditions, better anything than Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. They went there because it was cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah. So anyway, I think it's a futile thing. But back to Stacey Abrams, she just thought, well, you know, a woman's ability to be able to terminate a pregnancy means that she can continue to work, and ergo, that's good for business.
Yeah, I love when you use the word ergo.
Did I use ergo?
Yeah, I just used it. I think it's really,
I meant to say hence.
Okay, that's better. All right, now, I know that the left-wing journalists and activists are putting a lot of pressure on Amazon to purge a lot of the conservative right-wing authors from its store, and they're so far having some success.
Well, it's amazing. I was just reading a Twitter thread. So Kirstjen Nielsen, the DHS secretary that's retired, they're already mounting a movement to make sure that she never gets hired anywhere. So if you've ever worked for Trump, not only do we make your life miserable while you work for him, but we're going to make sure that you have no career left.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the new thing. It reminds me of fascism, I believe.
Yeah, I think you got that right.
So how does that work? Like, how do you go to Amazon, which is just supposed to be a bookstore, and say, don't carry these authors? Do they just go trash with reviews, or how do they do it?
I don't know.
How do they accomplish that? That what will happen is then some competition will have to spring up to these things. And then, I mean, Jeff Bezos is still the richest guy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm stunned as to how they accomplish that. But it's frightening because, well, look what they do. You know, they've targeted Tucker Carlson. They want him off the air. They want, mm-hmm, Laura Ingraham off the air. They want Sean Hannity off the air. They want Fox News closed.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, if Trump were to say, oh, CNN is fake news, they go, oh my gosh, how dare you destroy the press? And if you were to turn back to them and say, but look at how you are with Tucker Carlson. And, well, they're not real. That's not a real station. They other people, they other things. It's the old, you start with, it's okay to punch a Nazi, and then Trump is a Nazi, and then everybody that supported Trump is a Nazi, and then it becomes anybody who doesn't violently speak out against Trump, you're a Nazi, and all those people get punched.
That sounds dangerous, because there's a lot of punching going on.
There's an awful lot of punching going on, and I don't see this being the... I don't believe this is the way God laid it out in the good book.
No.
Things to work.
If we're going to be a free people, and I hope we always remain a free people, we need more ideas and more dialogue, not less.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? We've talked about this before, but how many people have you argued into your point of view?
Zero.
Well, you need to work on your arguing skills.
My arguing is not very good. I don't want to argue with people. I want to win people to Christ. That's all I care about. I have no desire to win someone. I want Christ to transform their life, and then they will make decisions about their politics out of their transformed life. Right?
That's not the area that you play, right? And I also know that your attitude is, you know, I working as hard as you can to live that Christ-centered life yourself. Instead of having to try and persuade somebody, maybe they observe. Maybe they say, what's going on over there? That was, as you know, my story was, you know, that's how you brought gospel to me.
Okay.
At no point in time did you, you know, say, you know, if you want this job.
I never said that, but I do appreciate that was part of how you came to see the gospel.
Yeah. It was really the three of you, the way that you guys worked with your company together, and the way I saw how things happened for you. And I thought, well, what is it? Why are these three different? And, you know, and then of course there were always people that would say, oh yeah, well, those triple espresso guys, you know, they're just a bunch of Christians. And I thought, well, I don't know. So I never understood why the negative thing. And, yeah. And the amazing thing is that's what piqued my curiosity. I go, oh, so, well, that must be it then. That must be the thing.
Right.
So let me ask, which I did. You know, I still have the Bible. The three of you got me.
Nice.
From September of 01.
That's pretty sweet.
September of 01.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Hollywood stuff, it's interesting that the Unplanned movie has really done well. And the more people said, the more the media said, don't go see it, the more people went and saw it. They forgot about human nature.
Yeah, the Streisand effect. It's yes. When Barbara Streisand would make a mistake, and the more they tried to bury it, the more it got publicity.
Yeah.
I think it was some of it started with she didn't want people flying over her property to see just how rich and opulent she was. So next thing you know, there's drones, helicopters, there's people in balloons, you know, taking pictures. When you think about it, it was a David and Goliath type story that you think, oh my gosh, Twitter was messing with the Unplanned movie account. I was a follower and they would keep dumping me as a follower, and they would have 20,000 followers and then they'd be down to 100. And then you would refollow and it would dump you again. And Twitter was messing with them so much that it started to spread on other people's timelines, and everybody just, next thing you know, they're up to 200,000 followers where Twitter can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah.
They were banned from advertising in most television stations because they said, oh, well, yeah, the content of the, we find it offensive. So you're thinking, how can you take and make a movie and succeed when they won't run your advertising, when the social media platforms are silently banning you? And then God finds a way. Somehow or another, it all backfired. And what was it, like the number 4 movie? And it was in limited screens? Mm-hmm. It's huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And people are seeing it, and it's going to transform lives. Come on.
Patrick, we just have less than a minute, and there was one other thing I wanted to bring up. This is it. Eating raw garlic could help keep memory sharp in old age.
Yeah, see, now here's the problem with that. You eat raw garlic for 40 years, there's going to be nobody around to hear your reminiscences. You're like, well, I remember it as clear as day. Where is everybody? I love, you also sent me this fascinating article about they did a survey, and people, I guess it works out, they have like 4 hours and 26 minutes a week of free time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, I am one of the people that took that survey. It took 4 hours and 15 minutes, so I got like 9 minutes. But it also had a very fascinating thing that the number one item that people are going to use their tax refund for, do you remember what it was?
New tires?
Motorcycle tires.
Oh, wow. Now,
this is amazing because I actually am using my refund for motorcycle tires, and then next year I'm going to get the motorcycle. Pretty excited about that.
Well, I like that you plan. That's really impressive.
Thinking ahead.
Yeah, I like that you think ahead. Patrick, thanks for doing the show. Always nice to talk to you. Patrick Albanese has been my guest, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, the great state of Iowa. We'll take a little break and be back with lots more in just a minute. I always like to start the day with something really exciting and positive, and here we are, and I have a chance to talk to Dr. John Snyder. So he's a pastor and author. It's called Resenting God, Escape the Downward Spiral of Blame. What a provocative title. He is taught New Testament studies at New College, Berkeley, California, and has pastored and planted churches in California, New York, and Switzerland. He can't seem to find a boring place to go. So, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Those are pretty cool places. California, New York, Switzerland. You know how to pick them.
Yeah. Well, God has just put us in these places, and we've never complained about it.
I love it. I love it. Now, you're how much time have you spent overseas working, living, doing ministry?
It's hard to measure. I've been coming back and forth for the last 45 years.
Okay.
Full-time living, probably 11, 12 years, something like that.
And where did you spend?
Switzerland and Germany.
Okay. Did you spend more time in Germany or Switzerland? I'm just curious.
Switzerland, mostly Switzerland, yeah.
Okay.
We've been in Germany for 3.5 years, but I've been back and forth for a number of years.
Okay. I'm just going to be honest. I love Switzerland. It's amazing.
I do, too.
Yeah.
That's our home. We consider that our home.
Well,
I bet
it'd be real nice to you in the event you ever invite me to dinner at your home.
Yeah. Okay.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice. So certainly there are plenty of Christians that have suffered from feeling resentful of God and have had issues. Yeah. And that's not all bad, is it? I mean, don't we all go through seasons of being angry at God?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I've met so many, many people in my ministry who were either confused, disappointed, disillusioned, angry, various stages of resentment against God, long-term, short-term, and myself. I mean, I've gone through it myself. So that was why I wrote the book, because I thought I want to help other people out of the hole, because it can be a very dark, deep hole when you start resenting God.
John, can you tell us why you climbed into that hole?
Yeah, the media one was, actually I was in Switzerland at the time I was studying, and I was in my 11th year of study. I was just 1 year away from being prepared to teach university. And God had blessed me every step of the way, supplied money, it was wonderful what he did. And then in the 11th year, around Christmas time, I took away my eyes. And I couldn't read anymore. And I couldn't read again for 7 years.
That's
so I had
unbelievable.
To leave Switzerland. Yeah, it was to me too. And I thought, what in the world is that about? I just couldn't fit that in. Didn't make any sense. And there was no explanation. It was just one of those things.
Now, could light get in? Yeah. Could you see some images, or you just couldn't read? What was your?
Well, I could see. I could see. Yeah, I just couldn't read. I couldn't.
Okay.
It was a convergence problem. I couldn't converge my eyes on an object up close.
Okay.
So I could see okay, but the reading was gone.
Okay.
For 7 years, yeah. And so I eventually, in the 7 year period, I went to work in a church in California, and I had a lot of people who helped me read articles and things. They would put things on tape, and I would listen to the tapes, and they were really great support. It was at that church where one day a woman came in the door for a secretarial job, and 2 years later we got married, and we worked so well together that we decided we could go back to Basel, and she could be my eyes for me, which she did. And so in that year, she read to me 5,000 pages of theology in that 1 year, and I created study tapes. But there was one problem. At the end of the year, I would have to look at some ancient texts placed before me, and I would have to read myself. And so we thought, we're going to bet that God is going to give me the ability to do that before the day comes. And so as the year progressed, nothing happened. I was being tested by this specialist in Switzerland. And one day he pulled these old glasses out of a shoebox. And they were children's glasses, very thick as a Coke bottle. And he said, put these on, we'll see what happens. So I put them on, and I read for 5 minutes. And so we knew we were on the right track. And then from that point on, he started refining the lens so that by the time the oral exam came, I could read like an hour and a half. So I was then able to read the text before me, and that was what got us through. So, but I was prepared to leave Basel with nothing, because if I couldn't do that on that day, there was no special free passes for me. So I thought, okay, I could leave Basel and have nothing in hand, but I was prepared to do that. But it was a launch out to see what God would do, and he did. It was a wonderful thing. And then from that point on, I began developing my reading time again. And with these new lenses, I had worked up to 7 hours in a day of reading, which I'd never done before.
Wow. Yeah. So there is potential, John, of you kind of walking away from 11 years of work.
Oh, yeah, that's what I did. I thought it was over.
Wow.
Because I had gone to every specialist I could find in New York, San Francisco, Switzerland, trying to find an answer. There was no answer.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, this is I finished, I'm done. I didn't get the prize. I didn't get the degree. But maybe God just didn't want that to happen. So I faced it, but I always wondered, you know, what was the point of that? And it didn't help my faith any. So I had to adjust to that strange event. But it all worked out at the end, and so it helped.
Yeah.
What he did.
I can't figure out if this interview is about your amazing book, Resenting God, or about your amazing love story with your wife.
Yeah, that was a great thing.
Oh, my goodness. That story is like fascinates me, too, because you hire her, fall in love, marry, and then she reads 5,000 pages to you.
Yeah, and she was, she did a lot. I mean, she learned how to write in Greek and a bunch of other things. So the last year, the degree was both of ours. It was a degree.
That's crazy. Put her on.
Yeah.
I want to talk to her.
You could call her.
I'm planning on it because she sounds amazing.
She is amazing.
Yeah. So the questions you were asking God, like, why is this happening to me? Questions like that. Are those the questions that you address in this book?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
in fact, there are lots of different kinds of questions. The main issue was nothing makes sense. I don't know why God would do that. Why did God do that? Why did he allow that to happen? And all these questions that we hear from so many other people, I've asked myself. And I've had times when I just washed my hands and said, okay, yeah, God's there. I know he's there, but I'm just going to live my life and sort of walked away from the church.
Wow. So you were plenty angry at God,
yeah,
huh?
God. Well, I was angry and confused and disillusioned. You know, as I've done more research about this, I discovered something very similar. It happened to Moses and Elijah, Jeremiah, and even David. David's constantly complaining about God not doing what he wants him to do. But Moses, Elijah, and Jeremiah all said, Lord, I don't like what you're doing to me. If you're going to treat me this way, I just want you to kill me now and take me home.
That's true.
And I've said that.
Yeah.
These are the top guns, you know, in the Old Testament. Yep. They reached a place in their lives where they said, I don't like what's happening, God, and I want to bail out now.
Yeah. Why were you and the three you just mentioned being such black and white thinkers?
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
God's got something even more remarkably planned. I'm just thinking out loud here,
that's
John.
That's something we learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something we learn, isn't it?
You know,
we go through these things. And we don't know what's going on at the beginning of the journey. He leads us through the valleys, over the mountains, and so forth. And then we came out saying, okay, I think I'm starting to understand that, Lord.
Yeah.
And one of the main lessons we learned is that God is God, and we're not.
Absolutely.
He's sovereign. He has plans that he doesn't bother always to share with us, doesn't always tell us what's going on or why, but he does want us to learn how to trust him even when we can't see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. John, because
that was a huge lesson for me.
Yeah. Because your story, John, includes, why would God allow this to happen? Why is this happening to me? Because that's your story. Do you find other people come to you with their version of why did God let that happen to me story?
I hear it all the time.
I bet.
From
both
believers and unbelievers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the most common questions that an unbeliever asks is, okay, if God's so loving and all that, why would he allow X, Y, and Z to happen? So, you know, how many times have we all heard that one?
Yeah.
But also from believers. Christians say, you know, Jesus said, if you pray for an egg, God won't give you a scorpion, right?
Right.
Well, there's many people who thought that's exactly what they got. They prayed for an egg and God gave them a scorpion. What do you do with that one? My loved one has cancer. I prayed God would save their life and they died. So what's that about?
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of other things too. I mean, there's so many, I've talked to so many people with so many different amazing stories. It's the same sense of sort of like a sense of betrayal or disillusionment. God, we expected one thing, got another. Maybe in part by the way we've been trained and raised in church. You know, if we've been raised to think that God is there to serve us, meet all of our needs, answer our prayers, make us happy, and so forth.
Right.
We're going to be disappointed and disillusioned. So one thing we do learn is that God, he is sovereign. He's in charge. He does what he wants. Loves us, yes, but allows us to go through some pretty tough times in order to teach us and make us stronger. And that's what happens.
Are we just mercenaries? Do we just want stuff from God? Or do we want him?
A lot of us, yeah, well, we kind of develop that sense, don't we? We think God kind of owes us something. You know, here we go to church, we do all these good things, we're religious and so forth. And so maybe God kind of owes us something.
That wouldn't hurt, right? That's
into our conscience.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take long to get rid of that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
But it's part of our temptation. We're all still sinners. We're fallen, and we have silly ideas about everything. So.
Yeah. So.
But he's patient. He's a broad shoulders. You know, many people before us have gone through the same thing, and they got angry and walked away from God, and then he went out, found left the 99, went out, got the last one, and brought him back to the pen. So.
Yeah.
Broad shoulders, very patient, very gracious, and seen it all before. So he doesn't wring his hands. He doesn't go off in the corner and sulk and say, okay, if that's the way you're going to be, I'm going to leave you behind and all that. No, it's different God.
Yeah.
It's part of being sovereign. You know,
I love that God. That's the one I love, the one that never walks away. So if you have secret anger and secret hurts and secret resentments, and you're sweeping everything under the rug, is that healthy, or is that going to be kind of poisoning?
That's the wrong thing to do.
Okay.
I mean, let's face it. If we think something, feel something, say something, who are we fooling? You know, we're trying to pretend that God doesn't know. So the best thing is total honesty. We just say, okay, look, God, I'm totally honest. I resent you. I'm mad at you. I can't believe and trust in you. But I don't want to be in this position anymore, and I want to throw this off. And then God helps us out of the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the story of Corrie Ten Boom?
Oh, yeah.
She's told us many times about the concentration camp guard who was responsible for her sister's death.
Mm-hmm.
Came to her after the war and said, I'm now a Christian, and I would like you to forgive me for what I've done. And her first reaction was, there's no way. Don't even think about it. But she knew she had to, and so she said it was like a pendulum. As long as the weight is on the pendulum, it continues to swing back and forth. But if you remove the weight, it slows down, but it doesn't stop immediately. And she said her inability to forgive was like that. It was like the pendulum that slowed down and eventually stopped. But she had to pray a lot, ask forgiveness a lot, think a lot. And eventually she said, yes, I can forgive you, but it took some time. And it took some honesty, too. And I said, never pretend with God. We don't have to pretend to things are other than what they are. Just be totally, 100% straightforward, honest with God. That's the best policy at all times.
Yeah, that's a powerful reminder. I don't want to overuse that word powerful. I want to be real certain when I use it, but that's powerful. John, let me take a break. Dr. John Snyder is my guest, pastor and author. He's written a book called Resenting God, Escape the Downward Spiral of Blame. I'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I am on the studio line with Dr. John Snyder. He's a pastor and author. He's written a book that we're chatting about today called Resenting God, Escape the Downward Spiral of Blame. And when you think about all the difficult, painful issues in the world, John, poverty, disease, and every time you open the paper, there's another mass shooting or something that is just so disturbing. And everybody goes, come on, how would God let this happen? Has he turned his cheek away from what's going on in this country or the world?
Worldwide, too. I mean, over here, it's really not much different. There are lots and lots of very weird things happening in Europe, and of course, other places, too. But I'm more in tune with the European scene now than I am American scene, although I do keep track of it. And you have to ask yourself, why would that happen? How would that function in history? You know, there's a time for, let's say, when someone loses a loved one, you don't want to give them a philosophical explanation, right? Even though there is one. If you're debating somebody at a university, you can give them a 4-point answer.
Right.
But if it's at the funeral home, they don't want that. But they want comfort and they want presence of you, presence of God. and then eventually get around to the idea of resurrection, reassurance, and family reunion. That's
yeah. Funeral home is just suit up and shut up.
What's that? Oh, yeah, I've done hundreds of funerals in my time, and I've always wondered why. Who designs these places in the first place? You know, so like the Munsters, you know, horrible,
yeah.
Dark drapes, the dark wood,
yeah.
The somber tones and the sense of reverence and awe in the face of death. And really, it's supposed to be a celebration. I mean, actually, in a sense, laugh in the face of death.
Yeah.
And celebrate the resurrection. But very few of those actually take place.
There's so many different factions here in the world today that are having resentful feelings towards God. One group in particular I see is the LGBTQ community that has resentment towards the God of the scriptures because why would a loving God make me this way? Or why would a loving God not endorse the love I have for my partner?
That's a huge question. It is over here, too. I live in Germany, which is kind of the heartbeat of atheism. And so they've kind of solved that problem, see?
Yeah, that's true.
That exists, that solves that problem. But if people do have a theistic view of life, that creates all kinds of special problems. And, you know, I think with the culture the way it is now, and we Christians have an understanding of what the standard is, and they know that that any sexuality outside of God's purposes is not His will. But that's not the only thing we can go around and say. I don't feel like I'm called to be the sex police. I think my calling now is to bring as many people as I can to Jesus.
I got to get my notes corrected. It says John is the sex police in my notes, so I got to get that changed.
That's right. Well, you know, years ago, I thought that was my job as a Christian, sex police or some other kind of policeman. But that's not. My job is to love people. And then when you get them into this new transformative relationship with Jesus and God the Father, then they work out their sexuality and everything else in life in the light of this new relationship. So that's the strategy I have now. And that's kind of how I operate.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had many gay friends over the years, still do, and I love them as much as I love anybody else. And I don't feel obligated to approve of anybody's lifestyle, but I do feel obligated to care for them. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. What about when we are in a place of pain and we're suffering and we feel like God is silent? And we'd really love to hear from him. We would really like to get that message that creates breakthrough for us, but we don't get it.
Yeah.
How do we hang in there?
I understand that one very well. For one thing, when we're in pain, real pain, and longer-term pain, we tend to shy away from being around other believers. We shouldn't do that. That's the time to be close to the people of God. We need to be close and hear their stories and hear about how they went through pain and how they waited and eventually came out trusting God again. And I think that's the deal. If we walked out in the middle of Act 3, we're never going to know what the play was about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as people who are there with us can encourage us to say, look, I know you're hurting. We're with you. We're going to stand with you. And then be with you when it's resolved in some way, whatever way God chooses. And that's how we grow.
Mm-hmm.
That's how people go from weak Christian to strong Christian. Like Paul said, it's in our weaknesses, not our strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Grows us. And that theme is throughout the New Testament, that suffering comes our way, not as a mistake, but actually it's something that God grants. In Philippians, he says, in the same way that God granted you faith, he grants you suffering, almost like a gift, although it's kind of hard to see it that way, but as an assignment, at least, where God gives an assignment of suffering, and we go through it and become out stronger than we were before.
Mm-hmm.
Don't walk out.
Yeah. John, it seems like there's a place of balance between when you offer solid biblical wisdom for somebody and when you come alongside them and cry with them and sit with them.
Yeah.
It seems to me that Christians have this uncanny ability to be kind of reductionistic and say, well, what's your issue? Well, let's get it solved. There must be a spiritual something going on. And have you done this? Have you done that? And that's all got a place. And I'm saying, what's the balance between me showing up and giving you some tough love and saying, come on, God's word is real. You stand in it and God will be there for you versus coming alongside and going, John, here's a shoulder. Go ahead and cry on it.
In that 7-year period with my eye problem, I had more Job's comforters than you can count. I heard all the same stuff, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
you're hiding something from God. There's some secret sin. Your faith is not strong enough, and all this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, all that just totally, you know, destroys us when we hear that.
That's why you stop taking calls.
Yeah, that's right. But they're all over the place. Job's comforters are.
Uh-huh.
They're always there when you don't need them. I was talking to Amanda recently who was walking in a mall with a 17-year-old daughter when she suddenly collapsed and died right in his arms.
Oh, my.
And you can imagine the suffering of the grief of that. And some Christian in his church came to him and said, you know, that didn't have to happen.
Oh.
If your faith had been stronger, she would be alive today.
Oh.
Yeah. How's that one?
Oh, it's so abusive.
That's one of the worst things you can say to anybody.
Yeah.
But it happens. And I think what you mentioned about just standing next to somebody, crying with them and being present with them, carries a lot more weight than any kind of explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't really have a great explanation anyway. You know, no one really knows why God allows what he allows.
Right. I always
have to learn to trust him.
Yeah, I always have to remind myself that God lives outside of time.
We can look throughout, we can scan history. This is what I call history therapy. We can scan history from Genesis to Revelation and then all through the church history and missionary history in the modern world, talking to other Christians. And the same theme continues to arise, that God allowed difficulty, suffering, pain, disillusionment, and all the rest, but that he walked through it with us through it, and we came out the other side, like Joseph's story, for example, one of my favorite stories.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere along the line, Joseph could have stopped and said, wait 1 minute, this whole God thing is just a hoax. Look at all the bad things happening to me. But he kept going, and he waited, and I'm sure he had plenty of really discouraging days, weeks, and months, and even years. And then at the end, it's all tied together, and it turns out to be this incredible resolution to the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And the salvation of the salvation of Israel, the salvation of everybody who was part of this huge family, all the Jews. You know, it's something we learn. We all have a very thin slice of experience and history anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have to think outside the thin slice. We have to read. We have to know people. We have to know the Bible. We have to talk to other Christians. We have to read church history. And as we do that, we learn more and more about how God operates.
Mm-hmm.
Much easier then.
John, I'd love to end on prayer or a word of reassurance for people who are exactly in that boat you were in. Like, what is going on with my life? What is God doing this?
I'd be happy to. Okay, let's, Lord, I know there are many people out there who are going through unbelievable things that we don't even know about, and maybe their closest family members and friends don't even know about. But people are asking questions about your faithfulness, your sovereignty, where your love is, whether anything even makes sense anymore. And I pray that you would hang on to all of these people and breathe your breath of life into them, hang on to them. Keep them secure and safe. Surround them with your people, with real voices of comfort and love. And then bring them through so that at the end they will praise and serve and glorify you and realize that you are the great God that the Bible describes. Please do this, Lord. We thank you that you will. You're always faithful. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Dr. John Snyder, thank you so much. And, of course, his book is Resenting God, Escape the Downward Spiral of Blame. You're going to want to get your hands on this one. Thank you for being such a great guest. I could talk to you all day.
I could, too. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks,
enjoyed
John.
It.
That wraps up our show for the day. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. And a special thanks to all of my guests who did a spectacular job. And remember, tomorrow starts our spring share. And I'm very excited because I love the chance we have to connect with our listeners and to spread the joy. And thank you for supporting Faith Radio. And thank you for listening. As you lay your head on that pillow tonight, just know that God is writing his fantastic, grand, great story in your life. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.